Anyhow, I'll tell you what the reason why I wanted to talk to you is that I have been in ICE's office.
Yep.
And I've seen your handiwork. I've seen...
We're tired of it. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, it's all yours. I knew it was all yours. See, I had seen some earlier stuff, but ICE's staff had to redact the personal information, and yours took the longest. So I saw everything that you had, everything from the letter C to the letter Z. Is what they had. Now, they are not releasing this to me. They are letting me see it and transcribe it by hand.
Yep.
So I'm trying to work behind the scenes with their office and with Posey to get them to release this. And there
it
may
be...
So great.
It would be so great if you could get them to release everything. I'm just telling you that. Because it would take me off the hook. Then everything would be off of me, because then the records would be public, and then I could discuss them more.
Well, let me let you know how that goes, because I, you know, the clearest legal pathway is if they release them, and there are some issues, there are some procedural issues with whether a committee chair like Aisha can release those files directly. But I've told him, and I said, look, if you can release him to Posey, Posey doesn't have the same restrictions because he's not a committee chair. So anyhow, I'll keep on pursuing those avenues. There's got to be, I would not be surprised if you turned over 20,000 pages worth of documents, because I didn't get through, I didn't even touch them. I mean, I skimmed.
No, I'm telling you, I think I provided 100,000 pages. So, that's why when you say you went through that many.
Mine's a wag. I mean, I'm probably lowballing it. I know that there are some things that I have seen that were not in the documents that were in ICE's office. So that was a little interesting. Obviously some things aren't making it through the filter. But
absolutely. I'm sure that's true.
Yeah. But I wanted to go to Burrell.
Burrell, Jack Burrell.
Is it Burrell? Is it Burrell? I can never pronounce that right. Burrell. Okay.
So speaking of, these are the type of things. Whether you want to think they're coincidence or not, I actually had coffee with him this afternoon. He was here.
No way.
Hawaii,
great.
Yeah. So anyways, he's a great guy. He's a really young guy and, a very new, actually, when we did that thimerosal paper, he was still in graduate school.
Yeah. I bet he has a great tan.
He does. He looks better.
I got to say that I'm from California. So, what I saw was I saw some of the original versions of the Burrell manuscript, and I'm going to read some excerpts from the original if you can humor me, and it said, in light of these findings, the researchers conclude that the greater exposure to thimerosal from vaccines is potentially associated with an increased risk for the presence of ticks in boys between ages 7 to 10.
Yeah.
And that, I don't think that made it into the final manuscript. I mean, how did CDC react to this statement?
All right, did I tell you the story about this paper?
No, you told me that they hired the ticks guy, that you got this guy from Rochester. Yeah. Are you there? Okay, kind of breaking up. I'm sorry. Are you still there? Let me check my connection, Bill. It might be me. Hold on. No, I'm getting good connection. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm going to go outside just to make sure I have the best connection, just a second.
Okay, okay, no problem.
Yeah,
all righty.
Just a Okay, this paper was the longest paper in clearance I've ever had. So
okay.
It was in clearance for a year. And there's a really interesting story about this. So Gabe Kupermink, one of the other authors on the paper.
Right.
Gabe and I went to graduate school together.
Oh, no way.
And,
he was John Baril's advisor, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So Gabe and I knew each other. And, you know, Gabe said he had this great graduate student. I said, great. I want to talk with you guys about a study I want to do. And I said, I promise you this isn't going to be easy, but I promise you it's going to be interesting.
Right. Good.
So I told Jack that he was going to be first author. I said, because you guys are outside the CDC, we'll have more leverage because, you will have fewer constraints than I will. And
right.
I actually said, if it gets really crazy, I'm willing to, you know, drop off as a co-author and let you guys just publish this because this is the public use data set.
Okay.
So... So anyways, we did the whole thing. We wrote the manuscript. We initially had pretty, you know, strong wording, like what you're saying.
Right.
About the association. And then it sat in clearance for a year. And people just hammered away at the paper and watered it down more and more and more. So you got the manuscript you ended up with, which is the published manuscript. I mean, not the published. You ended up with the final cleared manuscript was just, the most whitewashed discussion ever. And then
right.
we got those reviews and we were just thrilled with the reviews. We're like, this is great. Now we can bring back in our original text.
Right.
So,
yeah, I have one of the whitewashed comments. It said, despite the significant association between thimerosal exposure and early life and the presence of ticks in boys aged 7 through 10 years, we think that thimerosal is not a major causal agent for tick disorder for several reasons. First, the magnitude of the potential contribution from early thimerosal exposure in the present study is small. I didn't get that. I mean, was that referring to the risk ratios or the odds ratios, or I wasn't sure.
There's for a linear regression model, I'd call them beta coefficients. So the beta coefficients were, I'll give you my perspective. Any effect you find for any analysis like this is going to be small.
Okay.
And I really do believe any analysis like this, if we found something, it's not going to explain the huge increase in, oxygen cases or things like that.
Right,
so,
right. No, I understand.
So whatever we found could explain, a percentage of it. But, I'd have to see the actual draft you're looking at. So are you reading a comment that one of the reviewers made?
I don't know if this was from the final paper or if it was from a severely revised manuscript that went out to publication. I couldn't really tell.
Yeah,
I haven't, and I haven't cross-referenced this with the final paper.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head. All I have to tell you is we wrote a pretty strong discussion. We sent it into clearance. I knew they would whitewash it, and then we got these wonderful reviews, which was, it was like a reality check for me.
Right. I've seen those reviews. I got those in documents from Posey, actually. So, and it was good. I mean, it was an eye opener. I hope it was helpful.
Oh, it was three independent opinions, right? Three
right.
people who had no vested interest in the outcome other than to say, why aren't you talking about significant results in the paper?
Right, right. It's just, you know, and it goes on. And if I can ask, I have a quote, I have an email from, this was to you, and it's not concerning the Burrell paper, but your original, the Thompson 2007 paper. This is from Nancy Levine, and she's looking and she says, Bill, I think this document still needs language clarifying that the tick finding, even though it's statistically significant and repeat the finding from previous studies, is something you would normally find in this population. Well, they're kids, but, you know, that's I don't get that. I'm also concerned about
Nancy Levine is not a scientist, so that's even crazier.
My first question is, who the hell is Nancy Levine?
She's not a scientist. She's like an admin person. She's I'm just wondering if you're reading it right. I'm wondering if she might have forwarded someone's comment.
Oh. So, okay.
It would be really surprising for her to make a comment like that, but she might have. But that's what I mean. These are the type of people. She's a policy person. I think she calls herself a policy person, but I can't remember. But, I mean, she is. She knows nothing about science. That's all I'll say.
Right, right. Well, I was pretty sure, because she referred to, I'm also concerned about saying that this finding should be studied further. I thought that was a travesty. Of course it should be studied further.
Of course it should be.
And I'm not sure we want to say this or do this, but I'll leave it up to you and Ed, and that's Ed Trevathan. Is that how you say his name?
Ed Trevathan, who was the center director at the time.
National Center for Birth Defects
center director. Yeah.
So if indeed these were her words, she was way out on a limb because she's not a scientist.
Completely.
Okay. And now on your 2007 paper, the 2007 paper, was it submitted to Journal of American Medical Association, or did it just go directly to New England Journal of Medicine? I thought it had gone directly to New England Journal.
I thought it went straight to New England Journal, but it might have gone to JAMA first. I can't remember.
Okay.
New England. I mean, we all think the New England Journal is a much better paper. So I mean, a place to
journal.
Publish. So I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know.
It was just a hint of something that I saw.
I mean, we might have been talking about which journal to submit it to.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I can find. That's not. That wouldn't be hard to find. I'm 90. No, we sent it to the New England Journal. We didn't send
okay.
it to JAMA.
Okay. Oh, I'm gonna make a note here. Quinton. Okay, that's what I thought, because it was. It's a good paper. It got good reviews, and and the conclusion still stands. Now, I went back. I mean, this whole thing. You know, it reminds me,
I want to talk about the Verstraten paper after we talk about this, because I have something really interesting to say to you.
Okay,
so
okay, that would be great. But I went back to Tozzi.
Yeah.
Because it looked like, and this I know, Tozzi was rejected by New England Journal of Medicine first. And there was a whole... Alberto Tozzi's paper.
Oh, Tozzi. I thought you were saying Posey, the congressman.
No.
I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah, no, okay. He's not. Yeah.
Tozzi.
Yeah.
I think they call him Tozzi. Yeah. Tozzi.
Okay.
Alberto, yeah.
And so,
he's got rejected by New England Journal and JAMA.
Okay, I thought I saw something that said JAMA as well. I'm going to write that down. But what I did, I went ahead and I looked at his results for ticks. And we've talked about this before. And so I just did a really simple student's t-test.
Yes.
Because we have the mean, the standard deviation, and the number.
Exactly. Yes.
They're statistically different.
I know. That's why I wanted you to look at it.
Motor tics and fauna tics, thank you so much, because they are statistically
I know.
Completely
I know.
Different.
I know.
Now,
I know.
Only,
but this is,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But it really wasn't analyzed correctly, but I never went and did what you did, but I was looking at it, and I was like, I wish I had done it, but I wanted you to look at it because I thought those raw numbers would be statistically significant. Just the numbers right in that table. So you have confirmed what I thought. Yeah. Okay.
It was. I haven't done males and females segregated yet. But overall, there is a statistically significant difference both in motor and phonic tics so it confirms.
But that's why you got to get the raw data. You can get the raw data if you guys put pressure on these guys. So, anyways,
okay.
And speaking of, Nancy Levine was poking her head around trying to find out where the Italian data was. They were trying to find it and see if they could get it, but.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah. Nancy Levine is this policy person, and when you started requesting the data sets, I sent an email to Frank DiStefano and said, "Why don't we get the Italy data? That would be great to have because X, Y, and Z." He had replied back. He didn't think we could get it. So
how did with David Shea?
Yeah.
I saw an email between you and him. It said,
yep.
"Hey, sorry to bother you. I'm trying to pull together everything I've sent to Alberto et al. You don't want to know why." So that piqued my interest.
Yep.
"Can you recall when you sent me, and can you find your original edits to the Samir-Sol draft we got from Alberto on December, early January of this year? What was where they were funded by CC, right?"
Yeah, completely.
Okay. Who was the project manager on that? Was there a project? Did they have project oversight, or was it just a grant?
Yeah.
Or?
Well, so this is where you just got to understand the transition. So David Shea was the project officer.
Okay.
I was really the person who was doing all the work because I designed the art, art. Neurodevelopment study, and we basically had Alberto do the exact same thing. So we had Alberto take every instrument he could find and, do it in Italian or whatever they wanted to do it in. And he basically replicated our design. So I spent a lot of time with Alberto. Now, David Shea is a pediatrician, and, he sat back and listened a lot. And, but he was technically the project officer. He was also the team lead at that point.
Right.
Now, as I've told you, he resigned in November of 2003.
Right.
And went back to the flu division. And then I think he tried to stay on as the project officer, but Frank took over. Now, Frank is an Italian, and he owned property in Italy for a long time. So there was a long-term relationship with him and Alberto. We funded the whole thing. They'll probably say, if you pushed it, they would probably say it was jointly funded.
Sure.
But I believe the only grant money they had was from us.
Okay.
And it is, understand my position. This was the best study of all of them, is the first thing I want to say. Second, it had a larger sample size than our New England Journal paper. Third, there was true random assignment. And, three, it also found a language effect. So it found the tick effect and the language effect. So there were two effects that were replicated. I mean, if you believe the tick effects were significant, which it blew my mind when, the paper disappeared. The results disappeared for several years before I finally saw a draft. And that's why I think that email that you saw was me like trying to figure out what happened to everything we saw originally. It was like, what the heck happened? How did it change so much? Because I was really thrilled that it looked like we had something that had replicated. But anyway.
But it was very interesting because, and the reason why I keyed in on this is then I saw, I think it was a letter, I want to say it was from Melinda Wharton or somebody in the ISO, and it was to a pediatrician who was very concerned about thimerosal and ticks. And in this letter, she went on to say, oh, well, we didn't see a consistent association in ticks because we did this Italian study by Tazi et al., and they did not see an association with ticks. And then she was talking about speech delay and how there were several studies that didn't see a consistent association across the board. And once I did my analysis, I was like, bullshit. Come on.
Yeah. It's total bullshit. And I know, but both of them, you have to realize, I worked with someone who worked closely, and I just have to tell you, I do not care for Larry Pickering. Larry Pickering, I can tell you story after story about why that guy is, I don't want to disparage him, but I'll just say I don't think highly of him. But I had a go-between between Larry and I. And we went back and forth on what should go on the NVPO list of things to follow up on. And if you notice or know what that list is, it was ticks and language delay. So those were the two things that went on.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So NVPO put it into what the CDC was supposed to follow up on, and the CDC never followed up on it. So it went into a national strategic plan for vaccine safety. And that's what frustrated the hell out of me, is they never did an additional study after that.
Right, right. I did see there was one thing. I couldn't find the date on it. It was ISO's response regarding recommendation 19 for ticks, and there was, you know, some odd number of recommendations. Assessing whether thimerosal is associated with clinically important ticks will be a research need for the ISO scientific agenda. ISO confers with NVAC, now they brought in NVAC's recommendation of a low priority score. And again, I just scratched my head, like, well, why would you, I mean, this is the piece with thimerosal that is still left hanging.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was very so NVP
and it was still NVAC still had it on its list. All right, so it's on their list, but NVAC and ISO decide for themselves it's a low priority. So a very biased political agenda, made it a low priority and, created a situation that would be difficult to get additional funding for.
Do you think they would ever revisit it? I mean, if we applied pressure and we started publicizing.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. They absolutely would. And I do think you could do more studies. And I have lots of ideas of studies you could do.
Right,
so,
right. I mean, because we want to apply pressure. And this is pressure that we could get somebody like Posey to appear at a press conference and talk specifically about this. I really want the Tazi data. You've kind of inspired me to double my efforts in order to get that particular data, because I think it would be very, very useful. And their analysis, they don't really do any types of testing to show that their populations are different outside of mean plus or minus one standard deviation.
Yes, and the other thing I was going to say to you about that analysis is, as opposed to the non-experimental studies where you need to adjust for things, you actually shouldn't even, from a theoretical basis, you don't need to adjust for anything in that study. So the second thing is they had an unbelievable response rate. They had an 80% response rate from the original study. It was like your world's greatest dream, and the reason is because most kids in most of those villages don't move, so they're very easy to find.
I'm going to call him. I might as well just call. I have not tried that yet. I'll just call Alberto Tazi directly. Explain. Hopefully he won't think that I'm a demon, like the rest of the CDC. But I'm sure I can get his phone number.
I'm sure you could get his phone number. You can at least email him.
Oh yeah, I've done that. He doesn't respond to the emails. So, but I'm not beyond stalking people. You know that. I'm sorry.
Don't do it.
No, not that one.
I would say don't do it. No, I would. But I mean, just don't. I'm just saying, that you, if he doesn't respond, you're not going to get and talk him down the phone.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. I'll keep trying other avenues. So now talk to me about Verstraten. You were getting ready to think about.
Yes. So I was reviewing a paper that was doing a reanalysis of the Verstraten study, and I reread the Verstraten article.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually talking to Chris Price about this week because I thought this was really interesting. So if you have reread the Verstraten study lately, you will see in the method section that for the big, I'm not supposed to say what HMNO it is, but for the big HMNO, the one with 110,000 subjects,
right?
That's the one that had the tick effect, right?
Right.
Right. And it's primarily because they had such a big sample size. So the other HMOs had, I believe, positive effects, but they weren't statistically significant, right?
That's correct. That's both
right.
Harvard Pilgrim and the Group Health Northwest or whatever it was didn't have the effect.
Right. So if you looked at that, you would just say, well, they didn't have enough subjects when they did the other two, when they used the other two HMOs. But regardless,
mm-hmm.
What's interesting to me is about other potential effects. And the reason I say that is they have this sentence in there, and I never really understood why they did it, but now I understand why it would significantly reduce the size of the effects. Okay, so if you look in the method section, it says, for NCK, we adjusted for which clinics the people were seen at. Because in some clinics, they said there were higher rates of particular disorders. Now, and I think this is true at this particular HMO, but I'm not positive, okay? If the kids who have, if you test positive on a screener for any condition, and then that triggers something for you to be sent to one of the Kaiser specialists, right?
Right.
So let's say you appear to have symptoms of autism, and then they say, well, let's send him to the autism clinic to see if he has autism, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you do that, then what you would do is be essentially creating a situation where some clinics look like they have higher autism rates than other clinics.
Mm-hmm.
And it could also be the case, for example, that if you live 60 miles out of town and the autism specialist is in town, right? You're
mm-hmm.
gonna drive in and go and see that person. So if that's true and they adjust for that, they essentially adjust out any possibility for finding an association between the thimerosal and the effect, because what they're basically doing is saying, I'm going to covary out all the variation associated with neurodevelopmental outcomes from specialists.
Right.
Where you would get the diagnosis from. I never really quite understood why they did that, and I didn't have the data myself. I couldn't look at the data, but now I'm very suspicious about what that might do with some of the
That's
effects. But
point.
I don't know. I guess you guys have access. You guys have access to that data, so I might be overstating it. But it would be interesting to look at some of the other effects.
Actually, I don't. I don't personally have the access. There, I requested a public use data set for Verstraten, and they told me to apply to the VSD.
Yeah, you probably have to go into the
and in the VSD right now. I tried to get around jumping through all the hoops that the Kairos jumped through to get into the VSD. Because they had to go through all these different IRBs, for each HMO that they were approved for, and it was time consuming and expensive. The Geyers are not approved to merge vaccine files. So you can't merge, you can't reconstruct for Stratton because you can't come up with a thimerosal dose.
Why?
For some reason, the way that they worded their proposal, and Peter Meyer, you know, he's different. He may go for it. I have nothing to lose by proposing a VSD study. I mean, I really don't have any. The worst they could say is no, and I would just do a preliminary proposal and see where it went. And because the RDC is very, very different than it was in the early 2000s. It's a much friendlier place.
Well, yeah, when the Geyers went in there, there was no way they could manipulate the data appropriately just because of the constraints they were under. I mean,
well, and they didn't know SAS. They didn't know anything.
No, I know, but there were many reasons. That was a big mess, both on the CDC end and the Geyer end.
But
that
it would
very
be...
poorly for everyone.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
If you could get access to the data now and look at some of these things, my guess is they put that adjustment in there because they didn't like what they were finding.
I would not
and
doubt
they only
it.
They only did it for one HMO.
That's right. Oh, I remember reading that. That for
yes.
the biggest HMO, they stratified based on clinic.
Yes.
That is, oh, wow. Wow, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
And see, I always questioned that because I felt like you were matching out any variability in thimerosal, but I never really thought to question that out in terms of specialty clinics, in terms of specialists.
Yeah. I mean, if it was specialty clinics, then you're completely throwing off the associations because you're
right.
basically sucking out all the variants associated with the actual outcome.
Right, right. You're comparing high with high and high within high, and you can't do that. So that is really. I'm glad you caught that. That's pretty amazing. It would be interesting to see what the tick outcome again would be. If you could throw off those constraints for sure.
Yep.
Okay. Alrighty. Thank you. I'm looking at my list. I have my bucket list of questions. Okay. Let's see. Talked about Nancy Levine. Talked about David Shea. The MMR paper.
Yeah.
It looked like it was accepted in pediatrics in July of 2003, but it didn't come out until 2004. Is that pretty typical for pediatrics? Does it take that long to get them...
I don't think it's that typical for it to take that long.
Okay. I just thought maybe there was a story there or something. I don't know.
It's a story I don't know, but, Pediatrics, JAMA, and New England Journal have very tight ties with the CDC.
Yeah.
So,
it was very...
I
will tell you, there was very
you
sparse
can do
information.
This. You, no, I know, okay. But you could do this. You could email Pediatrics and say, what's the average time to publication when a journal gets accepted? Actually, just go look at the journal Pediatrics, because they say when the article was received and then when it was published. So
okay.
You can just go look at a couple of articles and see what the turnaround time is.
Uh-huh. I wasn't sure maybe if it was a peer review issue or, but yeah, I'll look. I'll look for sure. It was very intriguing because there were in your collection of information that went to ICE's office, there was precious little about the MMR. Everything, thimerosal, tics, thimerosal autism, the Price study, Thompson study, the Brill study were all there. Nothing about what was there on DiStefano. And so I thought that was pretty interesting.
I led all the analyses with the DiStefano thing. Literally, mm-hmm. everyone else got rid of all their documents. So the only documents that exist right now from that study are mine.
Right.
And it was the five of us. The reason you don't see anything else circulating on the study, it was five of us behind closed doors for 2 years.
Wow.
So that is why you don't see anything else.
Right.
But what you do see, if you notice, is when I start getting pissed off that we're about to release some results internally, And I don't know if those documents made, I think you've seen those, I've sent those to you. So, you know, in October of 2002, I was, you know, starting to share results, and that's when they reprimanded Bob Chen. Actually, it was early September 2002. I was ready to share results, and I have notes that show we were going to even show them earlier. And then I do that early September, and then within 2 weeks, Bob Chen gets reprimanded.
Wow.
And then several weeks later, we get FOIA'd, and we get legal people asking for all our documents. And that's where there was an email exchange between Colleen Boyle and I about, you know, I was the only one that had documents. Everyone knew I was the only one that had documents. And I was like, you know, and that's when I considered, becoming a whistleblower, la-di-da-di-da.
Right. Now, I did see that you proposed a thimerosal Alzheimer's study.
Yes.
At some point. Whatever happened to that? Did it just not fly?
Yeah, it just didn't fly. The other problem was just, the problem with that is you wouldn't have any people exposed to thimerosal that would be old enough that you'd actually find cases of Alzheimer's. So, you know, you have to realize the heavy doses of thimerosal came in the 1990s. So if you followed these people for 50 years, then you could do that.
Right. So the VST would not be appropriate to study that.
Well, in 50, I mean, you know, from
in that time
1995 plus 50, which would be, you know, 2045, then you would.
You're retired before then. Okay. Let's hope so.
I'm still alive. I was going to say, hope I'm still alive.
So, there were several documents that referred to what was called environmental exposures and autism. Is that just another name for the Price study?
No.
Okay. Because it looked like it was beyond thimerosal. And so that's kind of what intrigued me.
Does it, do you have a name affiliated with it? Because there's tables. We have lots of tables where we've described studies. So I'm just, if you can tell me. NIH has, all right, there's one interesting study, too. There's the NIH, you and I have never talked about this study. There's a 2008 study that has Larry Pickering as an author. Where they went and did the biopsies. It's Larry Pickering, Ian Lipkin.
Oh, yeah, I know all about this.
Okay, did you and I talk about this study?
No, you and I have never. I've talked to Ian Lipkin about it. In fact, he and I are not speaking right now because he doesn't like me very much. Okay.
Ian Lipkin is one of those. Well, I'll give you an example. When I was trying to hold them accountable, it was funded by the CDC. I don't know if you know that. It was funded by the CDC. The money was sent to the NIH. It was the worst mismanagement of federal funds that I've ever seen in terms of how that study was carried out. If you looked at the original study design and the fact that they only ended up with 25 autism cases, it's just insane. So I took over as project officer in the middle of that. And I kept trying to hold people accountable for what they were doing with the money. And the project officer on their end eventually dropped off the study. She was so fed up and tired with it.
Okay.
In the middle of the study, Ian Lipkin was asking for more money. And he actually, I don't think I kept the email, but it's the one email I wish I had kept. Was where he said he was going to go talk to his congressman if we didn't
get
more money.
That sounds exactly like Ian Lipkin. Oh, my goodness.
No, he's an arrogant dick. And then the first author, Maddie Hornig, I think she's first author on it. So Maddie Hornig, who was doing animal studies, is his significant other. So,
right.
You know, they're shacking up.
They're not married, but yeah.
That's
been historic, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, that was criminal because they published that study with 25 autism cases and the power was like zero. And they tried to give the impression that they did a study of, you know, gut biopsy. I don't remember exactly.
They ran PCR in the cases. They ran PCR in the controls. They found measles virus in several of the cases, and they found measles virus in the controls, and then they concluded there was no effect. But the actual conclusion of the study should be, oh, it's a really crappy study. You can't sell anything.
It was the worst study ever.
Thank you. When you talk to Ian Lipkin, he's like, this is definitive. This shows there's no correlation. There's no such thing as autistic enterocolitis that has MMR. And you're like, oh, crap. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, last question.
Yeah.
Have you thought any more about perhaps talking with me to POSI's chief of staff?
Here's the deal. I told you I've been down this road before.
I understand.
In 1993. I'll tell you my experience in 1993. The staff members of congressmen are infamous for promising things they can't do.
Right.
It just isn't going to work well for me, and the primary reason is if I was going to do that, I would have to tell my wife, and I know my wife would say absolutely not.
Okay.
I don't want to put my family in that situation right now. But again,
okay,
if you can get people to start releasing documents, it's, you know, that once documents are out, you know,
let me get
me
the documents released.
Position.
I feel like I'm close. I have to be very, very careful with how I finesse this. But there's a possibility that POSI will approach ISA directly on the House floor and say, hey, can I have those documents? Once they're in POSI's hands, then I can get them. Then, POSI's not constrained.
Right. So let me tell you one thing about the POSI request, all right? The POSI request is the first time that I went and took those Excel spreadsheets from the original files. So I've hard copies with written notes from Frank DiStefano and Colleen Boyle, and then I have the electronic files too. But it's the first time I scanned everything and put it into a PDF to make sure they couldn't claim they didn't have it. And then I also gave it a very good label, so if they do searches, and they always say they do searches and find nothing, but I gave the file name a name that you could never miss in a search. But if you haven't seen the Excel files, if they didn't print them out, that's, from my perspective, that's a red flag that they haven't provided everything. But if they did print them out, then you would see the things I had sent you. But my guess is they didn't, but I have no idea. So,
Did you make PDFs of the Excel spreadsheets? Did you scan them physically and make a PDF, or did you use like Adobe to make a PDF?
Recently I scanned them. Recently I scanned them, made a PDF, and I have a file directory, as part of the POSI request. I provided all the scanned documents, but that's the first time I scanned them and created a situation that will be very easy to
CDC has not released anything from that POSI request, the one that you're talking about. CDC has
not given anything
to POSI.
No, I know. They're not going to, but I'm saying in the earlier request, I did provide Excel files. I provided the Excel files, but I don't know if they actually printed them for you guys or not.
No, those were never produced. I mean,
okay,
and
well,
I would
those
know
were provided.
But
I'm just telling you, I provided those in that first round. The second round, I'm for this POSI request, which it may not see for another year or two.
Sure.
And I was told that they hired folks. What they pay? I used $300,000 to hire people to go through my files. So.
Okay.
So people are going through my files.
Well worth it. It's well worth it. As long as they get released, that's all I can say. I can save them a lot of time. But
that's right.
Okay. Well, let me chew on this. You've given me a lot of assignments. I love you and hate you for this. But but let me chew on this and I'll keep you in the loop in terms of the production that we're getting from ISA and if we get anything from him. So
Well, we're going to give you an honorary degree in epidemiology, PhD in epidemiology, if you follow through on these tests.
Bitchin. You got it. Okay. Okay. All right. Hey, thanks a bunch, Bill.
Yep, take care.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yeah.